Good morning. Welcome to the KRFY Morning Show for Tuesday, March 31st, 2015. I'm Chris Bessler, your host today. I'm here in the studio today. Actually, I'm not in the studio today with my co-host, Susie Prez. Susie is at home dealing with a water heater emergency today, so I'm going to be flying solo. But we're going to have a great morning show for you today. Our subject is local newspapers and the local media in general. We're going to start off with Jim McKiernan. He's the new publisher of the Bonner County Daily Bee. Jim's in the studio with me right now. Jim, say hello.
Hello. Hello.
Thank you for coming, Jim.
You bet.
And we're going to talk to Jim for the first segment of the show. At the bottom of the hour, we're going to switch up and talk to Cameron Rasmussen. He's the editor of the Sandpoint Reader. But before we get into the interview, let's take a look at the weather. Today, it's it's going to be in the mid-50s, and there's not a lot of rain predicted, but if you look up, it kind of looks like there might be rain.
Well, no, there's blue sky on this side. I see blue on this side.
Okay, well, maybe the weather report has it correct here. We are looking for rain a little bit later in the week. However, the temperatures are supposed to stay in about the 50s, and it's kind of typical spring weather for what we have around here. Sunrise this morning was at 6:26 a.m. Sunset will be at 7:14 p.m. And that means, Jim, we have gained how many minutes of sunlight in the last week, would you take a guess at?
I'd say 18.
25 minutes.
25?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, we're collecting, that's about 3 minutes a day, a little over 3 minutes a day. Each day is 3 minutes longer. Moonrise tonight is going to be at 3:48 p.m. That's this afternoon, actually. We're 88% full, and the full moon is going to be Saturday. The lake level is at 2053.82. And it's coming up a little bit as we see snowmelt come down from the mountains. The Moye River, now that we're into runoff season and whitewater people are interested in what's happening with the rivers, the Moye River is at 2020 CFS. It's been pretty steady there for the last week. The Priest River has been coming up, trending up a little bit. It's at 38.10 CFS. Both of those are good levels for whitewater people to be out on the rivers. And that's the weather and what's happening outdoors. In the week we've just ended here, it's been a fairly quiet week in Sandpoint, Idaho, our hometown.
It was nice, though, on Sunday. Oh, my gosh.
The weather
and yesterday?
Yeah, it was pretty beautiful, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Probably one of the bigger items that happened this week was that Schweitzer closed for the season. Sunday was their last day. Just the thin snow was their downfall this year, and they did a heck of a job. I know the Daily Bee had a good story on what the groomers were able to pull off this year with a scant snowpack.
Yeah, they were thought of as miracle workers up there, I think, this year. I know that most of the ski areas in Washington closed at least a month ago, if not longer.
That's
so
right.
The fact that North Idaho got that far.
Yep. They had a better ski season than a ton of ski resorts in the area did. Other big news this week, the county commissioners backed wilderness designation for the Scotchman Peaks. It's actually just an undeveloped area right now, but there's a group that's been working to get wilderness designation in the Scotchman Peaks for about 10 years now, and they have gained quite a bit of support. The fact that the county commissioners have come on board with it is pretty significant, and it was unanimous among the commissioners. It's also remarkable because the commissioners are, in general, conservative, but they agree that there are natural values to that those lands that should be maintained in a wilderness designation.
It's a beautiful area from the pictures I've seen. I haven't been up there yet. I need to go hiking, but I know Keith has taken some pictures up there. Keith Kennard, our news editor, and did some amazing stuff.
In fact, he just ran a picture from the top of Scotchman Peak in the paper this last week. Yeah, it is. It's really quite a hike. A lot of snow up there still. You might want to...
I'm going to wait.
Yeah, you could wait.
Yeah.
Also in the news this week, the Rock Creek Mine... the proposed Rock Creek mine, the rights to mine that have been sold by Revit Mining to Hecla Mining Company, which is a much larger mining company. And there's been a lot of concerns about the effects that a large mine project on the Rock Creek, in the Rock Creek drainage, which is just upstream of Lake Pend'Oreille might have on the water quality of the lake, as well as it's right at the edge of the wilderness area. They'd have to actually be mining under the wilderness area. There are concerns about that. That's the Cabinet Mountain wilderness area. They have concerns about the impacts on wildlife and the wilderness values there. And that's just a little bit of what's going on this week. What's went on this week? What's coming up, of course, is Easter.
Easter.
Yeah.
Do the Easter egg hunt there, Chris?
I did when my kid was little.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of like an Easter egg race.
In 20 seconds.
Yeah. The larger kids that are more fleet of foot definitely have an advantage there.
But yeah.
It's a great, they actually segment off a part of it for the little kids to wander around and find eggs. And that's held by the Lions Club every year at the Memorial Field. So it's a great community event. And even if you don't have kids, it's pretty fun to go watch it. That's going to be on Saturday. Cedar Hills Church is also having an Easter egg hunt on Thursday as well. And there's a lot of other things coming up on the calendar. We'll talk about the calendar later in the show. But I want to thank you again for coming in, Jim.
You bet.
I'm here with Jim McKiernan. He's the new publisher of the Bonner County Daily Bee. And Jim, you started in December.
December 9th, first day, yeah.
And you replaced the guy that's been in town for a ton of years as publisher, David Keyes. And I think I'd like to start off with just knowing more about who you are. What's your background in how did you wind up as publisher of the Bonner County Daily Bee?
Well, first I got to say to David, who's been a good friend for 6 years, he does an amazing job as a publisher, and I think he will continue to do something in that capacity somewhere. We still stay in touch weekly or every other week and try. And he gets me to buy him lunch right now. So I don't know how that works.
But I had advice from one of my publishers long ago was never buy your publisher lunch.
No, yeah. Maybe that's it. Maybe that was that Jim Thompson that said that maybe, or Pete?
No, actually it was another publisher, Jay Shore. He's a friend now too.
Okay. Yeah. And I actually bought my way into the business, if you really want to know the truth. My father-in-law had a small weekly newspaper in Snoqualmie Valley. He'd owned it since 1962. Bob Scott is his name. He's still around. He actually lives in Fernwood, Idaho. And we bought into the newspaper in 1996. My father-in-law was an interesting publisher. He loved the printing press, hated the public. He would rather sit in the back room smoking a cigarette and run the press than do anything with the public. And so
what year was this?
This was in 96 that we bought, and he had been there since 62. So
okay.
He'd been there a long time.
Okay. So he had he come up with the old printing technology, letterpress?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. All of the plumbing for the hot lead tanks was still in the building when we moved in. We still had a dark room. We still burned plates. We had a new arc plate burner. We had gone to computers, but we were still doing paste up. So we had the smell of wax throughout the building, which you probably remember as well.
Mm-hmm.
You'd come home at night and you smell like wax.
Yep. Yeah. And so the paste up was actually you put the page together the way you see it, but in pieces, because the type would be set in these long galleys.
Yep.
And you would put the ads together in pieces, and you'd paste them all up on a big page, the same size as the newspaper page.
Yep. We'd block out the ads with colored paper, or we'd turn the ad upside down to show that there was a new one coming. We had a really good person, Nancy Fish, who was a copy editor, and Brian Kelly was the editor, and they did a great job of laying out the paper. And, you know, I didn't know anything about the business at that point. I was totally new, and so they were great mentors to me during the early years. Karen and I both bought the newspaper together, so she did the bookkeeping, and I did pretty much anything else, from cleaning restrooms to developing photos to laying out. And then I eventually started writing sports just because I had a passion for mountainside sports.
Was your education in journalism?
Nope, not at all. I actually went through a technical program. I did a couple years at WSU and then went through a technical program. And I came up through teaching CAD-CAM systems to engineers for Boeing. And so that led to a management position within a couple of years. And finally, I got to the point where I realized Boeing had changed a lot in that time frame and decided I wanted to do something for myself. And there was a guy, and maybe this is the typical story, there was a guy in Snoqualmie, and this is where I grew up, named Kyle Riley. And he had a furniture store. And I always thought it was cool that Kyle could go from his furniture store. He'd put a sign on the front door and walk next door to the local cafe. It was a railroad cafe. And have lunch every day and talk. And everybody knew who Kyle was. And I thought, wow, that's kind of cool. You get to work and live in the same town. And so I looked for that opportunity, and my father-in-law gave it to me. So he gave it to us.
And so, obviously, you're not still doing that. What happened? Did you divest yourself of the newspaper?
We actually sold the paper when we realized the kids would get off the bus and come to the paper office, and we were working 60, 70 hours a week there. And they were spending probably 10 to 20 hours a week in a small room in the office. And we realized at that point that, hey, the kids are getting older. We don't want to miss them growing up. And so we sold the newspaper to a bigger company, Horvitz Newspapers. It then sold to Sound Publishing, which is a subsidiary of Black Press out of Vancouver, BC. And Black Press now owns probably the most community newspapers in the state of Washington. So I stayed on with them. And then in 2008, we had an opportunity to, you know, the kids were in college. We were both at Central Washington University, great school. And we opted to say if we could live anywhere at that time, where would we live? And we had a place on a little lake called Blue Lake out in the middle of Washington. And so we moved closer to that. And I got a job as an advertising director with the Columbia Basin Herald.
Okay.
And Karen got out of the business totally at that point.
I see. And the Columbia Basin Herald is part of the Hagedorn Corporation.
Yes.
Family of newspapers.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah.
The Hagedorn Corporation is the owner of the Daily Bee.
Yep. And they own papers in Kalispell, Libby, Shoshone, News Press. They own, I don't know the exact number, but I'm guessing 6 or 7 weeklies and 2 or 3, 4 dailies, something like that.
Mm-hmm. It's funny. I was just speaking, I don't know, just a couple of days ago, and I mentioned the Hagedorn Corporation to somebody as the owner of the Bee. And I said, and they're based in Coeur d'Alene. They said, is that the company that owns the Coeur d'Alene Resort? And their association with the Hagedorn Corporation was as the Coeur d'Alene Resort owner and the golf course. And mm-hmm. But the corporation actually grew as originally as a newspaper company.
Yeah, I think that's they bought this newspaper, I believe, in the 80s from Pete Thompson.
Yeah, in 85.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think they've owned several companies, and they still own quite a few different companies, but they have a very large presence in North Idaho, obviously.
Yeah, yeah. And in fact, so actually, I meant to throw out a disclaimer at the top of the show. My background is in journalism as well, and I'm the owner of Keoki Publishing. We do Sandpoint Magazine. And I did work for the Daily Bee. Myself. And
you were the editor, right?
I was the editor back in the 1980s. That's when Pete Thompson owned it. Pete Thompson actually started the Daily Bee. The Daily Bee, it's interesting to look at the history of newspapers in small communities. And in fact, the Daily Bee ran a good series on the history of papers in town that Gary Peach wrote. Did you see that?
I haven't seen
that.
That
was a little bit before
your
time. You should probably dig it up.
Yeah.
It's a great history of the newspapers in Sandpoint going back to the first one, which I believe was either in the late 1800s or the very early 1900s. But there's been a succession of newspapers. If you take a look at the newspaper business, we think about journalism as a, if you will, the fifth rail or the fourth rail of our democracy, because journalism is part of the free flow of information that people need in order to make decisions about who they're going to vote for, political matters. But it's also a business,
mm-hmm.
and it's a dogfight of a business sometimes. And you take a look at the history of newspapers just in Sandpoint, and there was a lot of competing newspapers that started up. Some won, some lost. And in the 1960s, the big paper here was the Sandpoint News Bulletin,
which is a weekly, I think.
What was the weekly at that time?
Yeah.
And Pete Thompson, who was a printer himself, printing background like yourself, actually, started the Daily Bee, I think, in 1965.
Yep.
As they called it, the Beehive.
The Beehive. I know. I had coffee with Pete, and I said, "Where in the heck did you get that name?"
Yeah. Yeah. And because it was buzzing like a bee. It was always busy.
Yeah.
And he ended up succeeding in the newspaper war with the established weekly at that time, the News Bulletin, and ended up purchasing the News Bulletin. And that's often the way it goes in the newspaper wars. The newspaper will prevail and acquire the other papers, and you'll have just a single paper. And then somebody will get a crazy idea to start a paper. A lot of it is driven by just passion for journalism and producing a newspaper, I think.
A lot of old newspapers started from, at least the ones I've done a lot of reading, and a lot of them were politically motivated. So you'd have a very conservative person didn't like the very liberal newspaper, so they would start their own newspaper, and you'd have these conservative liberal wars across the pages. And so many communities, Snoqualmie was no different. The early newspapers were politically motivated.
Yeah. And so now you're on board with the Bee here.
Yep.
What are your plans? What are your goals now with the Bee?
Well, I think, the nice thing about I'm a firm believer in community journalism, and just like you, I think we've got a little bastion of isolation up here, and I think that's nice. We're somewhat separated from the big daily newspapers, so we can focus on strictly what's local, and that's really my focus, is to make sure that the stuff that we put into the Bee is local. You can get national news on your phone. I read several newspapers on my phone every morning, and so there's no reason for us to publish that. You can get that anywhere. The thing that you can't get is, what is the Sandpoint City Council doing? What is the mine? What's the impacts locally? And so I think the first thing that we're really doing with Carolyn and the editorial staff, Carolyn Lobsinger, our managing editor, is to really look at what we're doing and make sure that it's local and it appeals to local readers. The second thing that we're trying to do is really make the advertising more effective. And that's somewhat of a passion of mine, is I see and hear people advertise and not get results. And so one of the things that I try to do is look at what they're doing, try to find something that appeals to people, and realize you only have a couple of seconds to get their attention. And so what we have to do is make sure that the ads are highly effective. We already have the reach and the frequency as far as circulation goes. So we just need to make sure that the ads that they're putting in the paper are really effective.
And what is the distribution of the Bee?
It's around 6,000, yeah. And then we've got our Shopper, and we've got the Priest River Times, and we've got the Bonner's Ferry Herald. So.
And you're a publisher for those two as well?
Yeah.
And those are weeklies?
Yep. Priest River comes out on Wednesdays, and Bonner's Ferry comes out on Thursdays. Mm. And Priest River has a circulation of about, I think it's a little over 1,600, and then there's a Shopper that goes to an additional 9,200 homes. And then Bonner's Ferry is a little over 3,000. So, yeah, Bonner's Ferry is both towns. It's an amazingly beautiful place. I mean, I drive into Priest River and along the river there. That's amazing. And then Bonner's Ferry, you drive down the tail and you just go, wow, it's a picturesque valley. Of course, mm-hmm. The first day it was blue skies and snow, so it was amazing.
So newspapers and journalism, we're in the midst of kind of a sea change that's being really generated by specifically by the internet. Because, mm-hmm. as you mentioned, there are a ton of resources now for people to get news online. Mm-hmm. How has that been impacting the Daily Bee? And you could actually make this a broader question. How is that impacting small community newspapers at this point, do you think? And what do you foresee happening in the future as the internet continues to, as more and more people get online?
The biggest challenge, and I'm sure you're aware of this, is how to make money with a printed product online. And so as a publisher, you're looking for ways to take advantage of that additional readership that we get online, which right now our Facebook page gets about 3,800, 3,600, somewhere in there, likes. Our website gets about 4,200, between 4 and 4,200 unique visitors. And so part of what we have to do is figure out a way to put enough information online to tease the printed product, realizing that the bulk of our money is still made in the printed product. But that's a big challenge, and there's a balance there. And we launched an e-edition, which is, it's okay. I don't know that it's the ideal situation.
Basically, the e-edition is it reproduces the page of the printed piece.
Almost online. Like a PDF that you can flip. I mean, it's like having a piece of paper.
And you can blow up a piece of it to read a story better.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. And you get to see the complete ads. So the problem with news websites is they haven't monetized that print ad customer. And so we've got to figure out a way to do that. And I think I'm more optimistic that a small community newspaper or small community journalism in general can do a better job than some of the big dailies. I'd be more nervous as a big daily right now, just realizing everybody's trying to get into that market. And I think it's going to, you know, take some interesting time ahead to figure out ways to monetize that. But I don't know that the e-edition is going to be the right way. One thing we've been doing is giving away for free for, you know, a year. So we are going to password protect that at some point in the near future and charge
so
a lesser.
So you have to have a subscription in order to read the newspaper online.
Yep. Or we'll charge a lesser amount for, because I don't have printing costs, obviously, with the e-edition. So, or distribution costs. So I can charge less for that than I can for the printed product.
So you mentioned that there's more money in print advertising than there is in the digital advertising you can sell. Do you see that switching up? Do you see a model emerging that makes it feasible for a small paper to maintain the staff they need to maintain in order to produce good journalism? But that stuff has to be paid for, right? So, and that's where the advertising comes in. And it's been a problem for newspapers everywhere. Publications everywhere, magazines.
Yeah.
How do you generate the dollars you're losing from the print world online?
Well, I think we've all, as publishers, I'm sure including yourself, have looked at different things. But one of the things that we need to become better at is being more of an agency for marketing rather than just a newspaper. And so we have lots of options at our disposal for marketing businesses, getting our content out, and I think that approach, looking at things like Facebook, you know, we did that survey and I was amazed how many people selected Facebook as their primary news source, which kind of scared me a little bit, but you never know what's on there. If it's real, there's no journalistic standards by any stretch of the imagination on Facebook. You can post anything on there and somebody will think it's news. And so we feel that's an option. I met with a customer the other day and talked about advertising budgets and they were convinced that they could spend, you know, $20 to $25 a month on a Facebook campaign and do their, grow their business. And you got to commend them for that. And I can't argue that that's not beneficial, but I don't know if that's totally the only thing that's going to work. So I'm not sure.
Yeah.
You probably deal with that all the time.
If you knew the answer to that question, be rolling dough, right?
We'd be sitting over at McDuff drinking beer all day.
I think Google figured out part of that answer.
Yeah.
And Google is actually a major competitor now to traditional news organizations because they consolidate the news. And competitor in the sense that they're taking dollars that advertisers previously spent on traditional products, mm-hmm. magazines and newspapers.
Yep.
I want to remind our listeners, that we're...
I'm sure there's some readers out there too.
There are readers, but they're listening at the moment. This is the 88.5 KRFY Morning Show. I'm Chris Bessler, the host, and I'm speaking this morning with Jim McKiernan. He's the new publisher of the Bonner County Daily Bee. At the bottom of the hour, in just about 5 minutes, we're going to be bringing in Cameron Rasmussen. He's the editor of the Sandpoint Reader. Jim, speaking of Sandpoint Reader, so... we're in a small market, and mm-hmm. I've noticed that Sandpoint seems to give birth to more different types of publications than other small markets mm-hmm. Do. For one thing, it's kind of unusual to have a daily paper in a town of just 7,500 people.
Mm-hmm.
How do you see these different mediums fitting together? They're competitors. Mm-hmm. In some ways, they complement each other, I suppose. Mm-hmm. To the consumer, they complement each other in some ways. But how do you view your competitors?
Well, one of the things I figured out real quickly is this is a highly intellectual community. And so there's a lot of diversity of ideas and opinions. And so that brings different media, I think, to the market more so than some communities. And also, I think everybody's looking for a way to live and work in the same community, and it's because it's a beautiful place. You don't want to have to commute somewhere. So it's a common practice in a lot of markets to see publications start and come into the market. And I think there's room for, you know, multiple products. I don't know how that's going to play out. You know, really, it's going to boil down to who can deliver the most effective advertising message with reach and frequency. But I honestly think having a diverse background of opinions is a good thing for a community, because then, you know, some people say it's a very conservative community. Some people say it's a very liberal. We get tagged with different lines depending on the front page story, and I'm sure the reader does as well. But if you don't have that diverse mix, I think you lose something. And so it's good to hear opinions from both sides. But I'm not quite sure how all of that plays out. I think it's common in every market to see competitors come and go. Heck, we had two weekly newspapers in our market come and go during the time that I owned my newspaper. So, and in fact, there's two serving that community, and it's not that big either. So it's
in a sense, it's like coffee shops.
It is. It kind of is.
Newspapers are businesses, and you know, the consumers end up favoring one over the other, and one makes it and one doesn't.
Right.
Or in coffee shops, there's more coffee shops in town, so there's a little larger market maybe to split up. But we do have an unusual number of publications here. If you count the River Journal, there's a Living Local magazine, a Sandpoint magazine, a Bonner County Daily Bee,
the Co-op,
the Sandpoint Reader, the Co-op Roundup, which is actually quite an interesting publication. Mm-hmm. It reaches a different market segment, so it's a different function. We are going to be running out of time here shortly. Mm-hmm. What would you like to tell people about the Bonner County Daily Bee?
You know, I think the biggest thing would be I'm trying to get around and meet people. I'd love to talk about what marketing you're doing and that kind of thing, to see if there's anything that we can help with. Hopefully you'll see the quality of the bee improve. You know, we've really worked on, I heard a lot of stories when I first got here about errors and omissions and jumps that didn't go to any place. And
typos.
You know, typos, yeah. You told me a story.
Wrong headline on the wrong story.
Yeah, you told. Yeah. What was the one? Bear. It was a story about a bear, and instead of bear, they used B-A-R-E. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, that could actually lead to some funny conclusions. Anyway, so I think that's a big part of it, is you'll see it improve in quality, I hope.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Jim McKiernan, publisher of the Bonner County Daily Bee, thanks for coming in this morning.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And we're going to take a musical break, and then we're going to come back in, and we're going to be speaking with Cameron Rasmussen. He's an editor of the Sandpoint Reader. And this is a song that Jim suggested. It's Styx. It's Blue Collar Man. And that was Styx, Blue Collar Man, suggested by Jim McKiernan, our guest who just left. And we now have in the studio with us Cameron Rasmussen. He's the editor of the Sandpoint Reader. Cameron, say hello.
Oh, hello.
Thanks for coming in, Cameron. This is our newspaper and media day here on the morning show. And I think I'd like to start with, the Sandpoint Reader is a new weekly paper. It's actually a new / old weekly newspaper.
that's correct.
It started originally in,
2004, I believe?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
By a couple of fellows, Zach Hagedorn and
John Reuter. And yes. Chris DeClure.
And Chris DeClure, yeah, three guys. Yeah. Started it up. And it ran until as a weekly, alternative weekly paper in the mold of a Inlander or a Seattle Weekly type of paper. Mm-hmm. It ran until I think just 2 years ago, 2012 or 13. And then those guys decided to leave the paper. They're off doing other pursuits now. Zach Agley went on to be editor of the Boise Weekly. Mm-hmm. Boise.
Yes, still a friend of the paper, still helping us out from time to time, which is great to have that support.
Yeah, and then last fall, I think around in November or December, one of the original contributors to the reader, Ben Olson, mm-hmm. got a wild hair As he does, I understand.
Yeah.
and decided to start the reader back up.
Mm-hmm.
And the first issue of the revived reader, if you will, came out in January, right?
Third week
of January.
I think it might have been earlier than that even. I think we got two issues in January. It's been a crazy ride so far. It's hard to believe we're this far into it, but we are. It's been satisfying so far.
So, Cameron, I wanted to start off with finding out a little bit more about you. Tell us a little bit about your background and your career path to get to the Reader, a startup alternative weekly paper in a small town.
Okay, sure. I've always been interested in writing, and so it always seemed like a natural course to me to start getting into journalism, even from a young age. And so, when I was a kid, I did a couple of pieces for the local paper growing up in Libby, Montana. You know, I did the high school journalism thing. To fast forward, after going to the University of Montana in the mid to late to 2000s, I wrapped up my studies there by doing an internship for the Missoula Independent, which is the alternative weekly publication out of Missoula. So that's what got me interested in alt-weeklies for the first time. I really enjoyed working in that environment. I enjoyed the emphasis on arts and culture and entertainment. I ended up doing a lot of interviews with musicians and comedians and people like that during that time. Some that are, that were really on the rise and are pretty big names now, like Reggie Watts, who's a musician and a comedian that you've probably seen from time to time. He's the guy with the great big hair that shoots out everywhere. Toward the end of my internship there, I got a job with the Daily Bee here in Sandpoint. And so
what year was that?
That would have been the end of 2010.
Okay.
So I wrapped things up there and transitioned directly to Sandpoint and started working my first, real professional job. I spent 4 years there at the Daily Bee, and it was a pretty terrific experience.
What were you covering at the Bee? What was your beat?
I handled city and business news primarily. Those were my two, official beats. But I also did, any number of human interest stories. Pretty much anything that really needed to be covered, I would cover. Unless it was like a cops and courts type thing or county news. Keith handled all of that in addition to everything else that he did. So it was a pretty good system, pretty good division of labor. We all, fell into our grooves fairly comfortably there.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it was a good experience.
So were you seeing the Daily Bee as just kind of a career step for you and with the intention of moving on to a larger metro area?
That was the idea at the time. I figured I would probably be in Sandpoint for maybe a year or two and then move on. As it turns out, after a couple of years here, I found that I really enjoyed living here. By that time, I was starting to feel like a real member of the community, and that was a pretty good feeling. And so when the opportunity came up to try something a little different that would maybe expand my experience and develop my career in a direction that I wanted to take it, which was to focus more on the arts and entertainment and longer pieces of journalism that are directly tied into the culture of a community, that was a pretty appealing prospect when the I first heard that the reader was going to be making its return. So that was kind of my thought process walking through that. It was not an easy one by any means, but you know, big decisions like that rarely are. So,
you decide to leave the Bee, come on board with the reader.
Mm-hmm.
And your role now actually is a little different. You're editor.
I am.
So your responsibility is not just to write some stuff yourself, but to ride herd on other contributors.
Yeah. It's definitely a new experience. Yes. Yeah.
As you're finding, I'm sure.
A bit of a learning curve. I'm starting to sink my teeth into this new role here, but it's also a whole new set of skills that I've never had to utilize before. So it's been interesting.
So how do you envision shaping the reader's, the type of coverage that the reader has and the reader's voice, if you will, in the community?
Now, that's a really good question. I think that we had a great tone and level of expectation already set by the crew of the old reader. And so when it came time to bring back the publication, it was interesting because we already had a, I guess you could say, a presence within the community established, and expectations were already set, which was both a good thing for us and also kind of an intimidating thing because, you know, you felt compelled to deliver a product to the quality that people were expecting. But I guess as we've moved forward, you know, we are, I'm hoping that we're honoring that those original expectations and that legacy that's been established for us. But I do hope that as we continue to move forward, we just maintain the reader's presence as, you know, a mirror of the community, something that is a friend to the arts community here in town, which is, you know, as has been well established by many people, really vibrant for a town of this size. That's really what we want to be as a publication, while also delivering some of the what we see as some of the best or the most pressing, I suppose, news content from week to week. And you know, as we dive deeper into our web presence, which is a project that we're actively working on, that's going to, I think, expand. Another way we want to be a community presence is, you know, in the way that we work with our contributors. We were already fostering relationships with all sorts of really great people here in town, people that are known, and so hopefully from time to time you'll flip open the paper and see something from somebody that you know that's written in or has a letter or an article or something to contribute. And that's also been a really fun aspect to work on from my perspective.
I wanted to remind our listeners that they're listening to the 88.5 KRFY Morning Show. I'm your host, Chris Bessler. I'm speaking this morning with Cameron Rasmussen. He's the editor of the Sandpoint Reader. Thanks for being here, Cameron. And I did want to mention that on Thursday, April 2nd, that in the Thursday edition of the KRFY Morning Show, hosts Jim and Jack are going to be sitting down with master pianist Scott Kirby to talk about his musical art and style. That's the Thursday KRFY Morning Show, which airs at 8 a.m. That would be a good one to catch as well. Cameron, you mentioned that you want to make a strong connection to the arts community, mm-hmm. and support and reflect the arts community with the Sandpoint Reader. What about other types of things? The types of stories that go into you know, the culture of the community, the culture outside of arts, you know, the lifestyles of people here, and also, you know, politics is a big part of a small community as well. How do you see the reader covering those sorts of stories?
All right. Well, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, it's definitely something that we're actively pursuing in terms of news content to bring what we see as the news stories that directly influence Sandpoint culture. So a good example of that not too long ago was this watershed trail that is being developed. I think it goes without saying that our outdoors enthusiasts are a huge part of Sandpoint culture, and that was a pretty interesting point where the culture of a community and the news intersect. To your point, politics is definitely a major part of the culture of Sandpoint. And yeah, you only have to get out in town during an election season to see the number of signs in yards and things like that and know that that's true. That is, as of now, something that we are on tested in terms of at least the new publication. But what I envision when we get to that point is to balance not only coverage of various political events, you know, forums and things like that, counterweigh them with, I would say, you know, profile pieces that try to dig into these candidates' backgrounds and their history and, you know, what qualifies them for the positions that they're seeking.
So you're planning to make the reader a pretty active participant in the political process?
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes, certainly. It's going to be an exciting time of the year when that rolls around. That's for sure.
Yeah. Well, we have a city election coming up this this November, and then of course the big election will be next year when there's
right.
going to be a presidential election. It tends to spark more interest even in the local races as well. So, on the political question, how do you balance out the reader between the opposing viewpoints? Are you trying to present the reader from a point of view, or what are you trying for with your coverage?
Well, when we started this project out, we had many discussions about how we wanted to present the publication to the community, and a big part of those discussions were what editorial voice the reader would have. Because we established our mission as being a sort of a reflection or a mirror of the community, we did feel strongly that the reader should have a tone that reflects, you know, the broad variety of opinion within the community. And so we've really been working on here in the earliest stages of the publication to encourage and seek out contributors that could write from a variety of different political voices, a variety of different points of view based on their own experiences. And, that's our success in that is ultimately up to everybody else to decide. But
and so you've been recruiting contributors that represent the spectrum. I have noticed you've had some more liberal writers. You've had some more conservative ones. Christian Fioravanti, who was mm-hmm. the Constitution candidate in the for legislature I think Dan McDonald, you know, he's a Republican commentator here in town, has written for you as well.
Yeah.
And you've had some more liberal voices in mm-hmm. there. So that's part of how you're going at it, is by trying to encourage the diversity of viewpoints. Is it hard to get contributors representing a certain segment of the community at this point?
You know, the support from the community and our contributors in particular has been really tremendous. You know, this was one of the things that I was really concerned about out of the gate was, you know, are we going to find the level of interest there from people that are wanting to send in articles and, you know, are we going to not only just is the interest going to be there, but are we going to be able to capture the variety of expertise that we need to fill out, as you know, the many different topics that we're going to be writing about. And so it's been really gratifying to see that my fears to a certain degree were unfounded, and the level of interest has definitely been there. You know, we're always at the same time looking for more people who are interested in writing, and so you can find the details to contribute, just the process, by going online to www.sandpointreader.com.
Cameron, that's a good segue into some questions about your online presence. You mentioned that the Reader right now is available online as a digital flip page. It looks just like the printed piece,
mm-hmm.
But you're planning more with the website.
That's correct. We are going to be launching in the near future a more fully featured website that is going to be able to support not just the flip page online edition of the Reader that has been generating some pretty healthy interest, but also we're going to eventually be launching the online architecture to be able to post stories on the website on a daily basis. And so that's going to be a major undertaking, one that we're kind of just developing right now, it's going to be coming here fairly soon, I'm hoping, and I think readers are going to be pretty happy with the way the new content is presented.
So what will be the new content on the online thing? How's it going to differ from what they see in the print piece?
Well, you know, one of the difficulties that we have right now is just the fact that, you know, as a weekly publication, we do miss out or not necessarily miss out, but run into episodes where a big news story could come out on a Thursday, for instance, right when we've published. And so that's kind of a...
So in that case, you have to wait a full week
right.
before your weekly news cycle gives you the opportunity to write about that story. But you know, online, people could expect to see a story on that as it happens.
Exactly. And that's what we've been excited about here, just as the... as we look to the near future. For the time being, we've been somewhat relying on our Facebook page, which you can find quite easily by going on Facebook and searching for the Sandpoint Reader, if you're so inclined. But we've been relying on our Facebook page to post, you know, periodic updates on when a significant event rolls around, like, for instance, Pondere's little instance with a bank robbery attempt. There was also the news out of Boundary County with some kind of North Idaho connection to an ISIS hit list, which was a very strange and disturbing story.
And you posted that up early, probably before anybody else in town had broken that story, I think. And as I understand it, your Facebook page, the views and the shares on that story jumped up quite high.
Yeah, you know, it's been interesting to watch. You are able to see how far your various posts have spread and how many people they've reached in the time that they've been posted. And yeah, we reached, I can't remember what the exact number was, but somewhere in the 4,000 or 5,000, 6,000 range, something like that, which is kind of incredible to watch. Yeah.
It speaks to the viral, the strength of the Facebook in particular is in its ability to make things go viral. People see something, if they share it or comment on it, and then their friends see it and they can in turn share it, and mm-hmm. And it builds up kind of that geometric progression there. So Cameron, we're about at the end of our time here, and thank you for coming in. Is there anything that you'd like to your listening public to know about the Reader before we sign off?
Well, I suppose I'd just wrap things up by saying that we're proud to be here after all these weeks. You know, I believe it was our 10th issue that we published on Thursday. It's been really gratifying to see the response. We always want to reach more people, so please keep an eye out for it on newsstands and in your favorite restaurants or bars or grocery stores.
I've seen it at Super One and Safeway.
Right.
And Winter Ridge and Yolks.
Yeah, but keep an eye out for it on Thursdays. We are delivering in the morning and early afternoon. So, and by all means, write in. Tell us what you think. If you want to contribute your photos or your artwork or your articles, then just get in touch with us, and I'd be happy to hear from you.
Your door is open?
Yeah, I suppose that would be accurate.
It's interesting that the Reader is also putting on a monthly concert.
That's true, yeah.
The Live at the Office concert, I went to it last week. You had Josh Hedlund. Mm-hmm. Great atmosphere to listen to a very accomplished musician in a very intimate, close atmosphere. So that's interesting. And you're planning to do these Live at the Office concert monthly, is that correct?
That is correct. At this time, I believe our guest for the coming month is going to be Justin Lantrip, which is going to be another one that you'll definitely want to check out. So we've also got more great local musicians lined up, like Holly McGarry. So we're really excited about what the future holds on that front.
You're not just reporting on the arts, you're being the arts.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of a fun thing, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay, Cameron Rasmussen, editor of the Sandpoint Reader, thank you very much for coming in today.
Well, thank you.
And I wanted to mention for our listeners that on the Thursday morning show with Jim and Jack at 8 a.m., they're going to be sitting down with master pianist Scott Kirby to talk about his musical art. And that, again, will be airing at 8 a.m., as always, you can pick up these broadcasts as a podcast from the KRFY Morning Show website at KRFY.org. It's the KRFY website, actually, for the whole enterprise here. At KRFY.org, you can hear the morning show as a podcast. And that is about to bring us to the end of the show. There's a lot of things going on in town. I'd like to refer folks to the calendars we have at KRFY.org or SandpointOnline.com. Sandpoint Online provides those calendars to the KRFY website. And we're going to close now with a Beatles song, Octopus's Garden. Thank you for tuning in today, and we'll talk to you again next week here on the KRFY Morning Show.